It's Monday, October 26th. Does this count as a second wave in the White House? We start here. Barely a week before Election Day, several people around Vice President Mike Pence test positive for coronavirus.
The vice president is apparently deemed an essential worker and thus does not need to quarantine.
Yet despite being exposed, we still might see him on the floor of Congress tonight.
Barrett's nomination isn't really playing.
Judge Amy Coney Barrett is about to get confirmed, but could this be the GOP's last hurrah in the Senate? And COVID-19 is overwhelming ICUs in more and more towns.
There are literally COVID patients all over the hospital.
There are COVID patients all over the hospital, yes.
And yet folks down the street still don't believe it's worth wearing a mask. We'll take you inside some of America's fastest growing hotspots. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. All right, buckle up. There are 8 days left until Election Day.
To see the long line and the queue is fantastic. I don't mind standing in that line.
And to see the lines of early voters across this country over the weekend, it's easy to see how we are heading towards these insane turnout numbers.
From out-the-door lines in Indiana to curbside voting in Texas, at least 54 million Americans have already voted.
We've just learned that more votes have been cast this cycle with 9 days to go than all of the early vote in 2016.
Of course, for every person that's already voted, there are even more people out there who have yet to vote either this week or on Election Day itself. So the campaigns are still looking to fire people up. And you remember how thwarted President Trump's re-election campaign was for a while when, in the midst of downplaying the seriousness of COVID-19, he got the virus himself.
Now we have the best test, and we are coming around. We're rounding the turn. We have the vaccines. We have everything. We're rounding the turn. Even without the vaccines, we're rounding the turn. It's going to be over.
Well, now, with days to go, there's been another cluster of cases, this time around the Vice President of the United States, the leader of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. ABC senior editorial producer John Santucci has been covering the White House response to the coronavirus. Lately, that's also meant covering the coronavirus inside the White House. So, John, how many cases are we talking about here?
So here's where we are. We've learned that there are five people in the vice president's orbit that have tested positive for the coronavirus. Now, this started, Brad, early last week, almost a week ago from today. Marty Obst, who is a longtime political consultant and ally to the vice president, was traveling with him last Monday. We learned that he tested positive late Tuesday night. And at that point, not much got out. We didn't learn about it until the weekend. But the Pence team started to quarantine the staffers that were around him. Now, interestingly, the two staffers, or two individuals, should I say, that weren't included in that were the chief of staff, Mark Short, and the vice president, Mike Pence.
Now, it really is great to be in Pontiac. I think this might be my first visit here. And in Waterford.
Now, the week goes on. Mike Pence is doing rallies all throughout the country.
And the road to victory runs right through Ohio.
Ohio, Pennsylvania. He actually goes, Brad, and early votes in his home state of Indiana.
Great honor, and great to be back home again.
He has a packed schedule, and his chief of staff, Mark Short, is right there by his side. We learned, Brad, Saturday night, Mark Short tested positive, and in addition to that, three other staff members also positive. We don't know exactly when all of them panned out, but nevertheless, Brad, that is a lot of people for that small team.
And Mark Short, like, that's like the main chief of staff, means you're the main guy Vice President Pence works with all day, right? I guess I'm trying to figure out how likely it is that the vice president was exposed.
There is no one closer to Vice President Mike Pence than Mark Short.
In February, when the vice president took control of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, collectively 8,000 tests had been conducted. We partnered with the private sector, so that now there are over 800,000 tests being conducted every day.
Right,
so
he is a longtime aide to this vice president, worked with him in Indiana, but he is right there by his side for everything. And remember, as you mentioned, Brad, Vice President Pence is the chair of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Every meeting that is happening, Pence is there, and so is Mark Short. And Brad, if that's not enough for these three additional staffers we're hearing about, one of them is the vice president's body man. Now, every time people hear that phrase, it's what is it? Who is that? Think of Charlie from The West Wing. Think of Gary from Veep. This is the aide that is the closest to the office holder. They are always there. Anything that the office holder needs, this individual is responsible for. Oh. Now, I'm told, Brad, though this individual tested positive later in the week, they had been quarantining since last Tuesday when, as I said, that outside advisor was confirmed positive.
It is great to be in the Tar Heel State, even on a soggy night, just 9 days away from a great victory all across North Carolina and all across America.
What happens next? Because it's the last week of the campaign. Does the vice president like have to stay home starting now? What do you do?
Well, you know, Brad, most people, the answer would be yes. But, you know, everybody here, I hate to be cute about this, but bangs to the beat of their own drum. And the vice president is apparently deemed an essential worker and thus does not need to quarantine. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, Brad. I mean, we've all been covering COVID together for how many months now? Anybody that is in direct exposure needs to quarantine, needs to get off the trail.
Right. You can be an essential worker, Brad, unless you know that, like, unless you know you've been exposed.
Right. And the other thing I would just note.
And you know who got it? I did. Can you believe it? Every time I'd have these meetings, a lot of people.
Even though Donald Trump pulled off the trail and canceled events because he was positive, he did get off the trail. I mean, he did stop campaigning. He had to go to Walter Reed. I mean, they got off the road. Right. Pence needs to really do the same here. And that's what I'm hearing from a lot of advisors in and around the White House. But at the moment, it's all systems go. The schedule's pushing ahead. And here's what's going to be really interesting, Brad.
So the Senate's going to finish their work on Monday.
Later tonight, the Senate is scheduled to vote on the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett for that open seat on the Supreme Court. Mike Pence, as the president of the Senate, has said he is planning to attend.
And I'm going to be in the chair because I wouldn't miss that vote for the world.
It's going to be really interesting if he still goes into a room with all of those senators, Brad.
And we're going to talk about that right now as we turn our eyes to the Capitol. John Santucci, I'll let you go. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brad.
So like John said, it's not just campaigning that becomes an issue here. Today, in one of President Trump's biggest victories of his first term, Amy Coney Barrett is likely to be confirmed as a new Supreme Court justice, completely shifting the balance of this court. So let's go to ABC's Capitol Hill producer, Trish Turner. She's sitting in the Senate right now. So, Trish, is the vice president going to be there in person?
Oh, Brad, only in 2020 would we have even this consideration. You know, every senator we tried to talk to last night, Republican, said, oh, I don't know if he's going to show up or not. They don't seem terribly worried. They think he'll, you know, he'll abide by CDC guidelines. But the dais on which vice president would sit.
Under the previous question, all post-cloture time has expired. The question is on the nomination.
There are aides, clerks that are actually close to him, just below him. I can't imagine how they would feel.
The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Alexander.
The chamber also, a lot of members mill about the chamber. They stay in the chamber for, a good deal of time. There could be procedural votes that, where Democrats try to keep members in the chamber as a sort of protest, which is what they've been doing. What do members do about that? Given our recent CDC guidance about, how long aerosolized, COVID stays in the air. So, yeah, a lot of concern about how this would work. It would be an extremely worrying scene, I think.
Not only has the White House coronavirus task force failed to keep the American people safe, it has even failed to keep the White House safe.
The other thing we learned Sunday night is that the Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer, told his colleagues, look, come in, vote, leave, don't stay on the floor, don't linger. There are aides who've tested positive. The vice president could be here. His message is simply the White House isn't taking this seriously, so don't risk your own health.
The Republican Party is willing to ignore the pandemic, to rush this Supreme Court nomination forward. And the vice president, after being potentially exposed to COVID, will preside.
Our Democratic colleagues should not have tried to filibuster this exceptional nominee. They should have listened and actually learned.
And so as for this confirmation,
That's happening, right? Like, right, because there were originally a couple of Republicans who weren't on board pushing this through so quickly. Sounds like even they're going to vote yes. Lisa Murkowski said, look, Amy Coney Barrett's qualified, so as long as this is happening, I'm voting yes. But can we talk about the politics happening in the Senate right now? Because you'd think like this would be a good thing for senators to run on, maybe. Does Mitch McConnell right now seem like a guy who is planning on being in charge of the majority after this election?
You know, surprisingly, Brad, he is not. I've covered this man for years. He wears a poker face better than anyone I know, probably. And he's sort of telegraphed a number of times that he thinks Republicans very much could be in the minority after this election. He said on Sunday something that I thought was a little eyebrow raising.
A lot of what we've done over the last 4 years will be undone sooner or later by the next election.
But this nomination, since Amy Coney Barrett's going to be confirmed, this they can undo.
For a long time to come.
And that's true. I mean, Judge Barrett is 48 years old. She'll be on the court for a long time. I will say, though, ironically, because I also try to keep an eye on all the Senate races around the country, and there's so many that are in play. It's so interesting. It's such an interesting time.
President Trump is running well behind his 2016 numbers in Colorado. And he's dragging down Republican Senator Cory Gardner along with him.
Colorado, great chance for Democrats to pick up Arizona. These would be knocking off incumbents.
Are you proud of your support for President Trump?
I'm proud to be fighting for Arizona every single day.
Is that a yes or a no for President
Trump? Putting legislation on President Trump's desk.
So in Maine, Susan Collins, she is very vulnerable to her challenger.
Senator Susan Collins has voted during Donald Trump's first 2 years of his presidency for every single judicial nominee that Mitch McConnell put forward.
North Carolina is another really interesting race.
Chaos has erupted in the North Carolina Senate race between Senator Tom Tillis testing positive for COVID-19 and his opponent, Cal Cunningham, being investigated for an extramarital affair.
But then we're not seeing a whole lot of change in that race. So maybe tells you a little bit about the incumbent being fairly unpopular. So they need to net four to take back the chamber. That's four races right there that I've named that could easily flip. Barrett's nomination isn't really playing big in a lot of these races. I think as Republicans, I'd really hope that it would.
As the Democrats went after her, it was like, boom. What do you have written down? What do you have written down on your pad? Nothing. Right? It's sort of cool. Happened to be a Republican that asked the question, but figure that one out, right?
I should say, it's probably in large part Democrats have maybe even neutralized this fight. They've made it a lot about, almost singularly about, the Affordable Care Act.
So does that, like, because forget Amy Coney Barrett then. I'm thinking about legislation, say like a COVID relief bill, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone keeps saying, that won't happen before the election. But right. if President Trump loses and he's a lame duck, and then the GOP loses the Senate and you got all these GOP senators who are lame ducks, is there any indication they would want to cut a deal then? Because I can imagine they'd be like, well, now we can just say no and make Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi work for it.
So it really is, that's a lot of ifs, but if we're going there, lame duck, I've covered a lot of them. It's very little ever happens in them. Republicans and Democrats are always exhausted equally. They don't want to come back to D.C., as I'm sure you can imagine, right before their holidays. And so it really is, you have to sort of drag them kicking and screaming. Now, the Senate's scheduled to be in session a week after Election Day. And so we'll see. I would say Leader McConnell is, he's really determined to get more judicial nominees confirmed. That could certainly happen in a lame duck. As for a big COVID relief bill, I've heard different schools of thought here.
Now we're talking and we'll see what happens. But at this moment, I would say that I actually think Nancy would rather wait till after the election. She thinks
I've heard one where Speaker Pelosi really doesn't, if there is to be a President Biden, she doesn't really want to have this massive hit to the debt, this massive package hanging out there as something he has to deal with on his front burner right when he comes in. So how about that? So, but I would just keep an overriding thought that lame duck is you always think there's all these things that are going to happen and then almost nothing happens.
Yeah, and by the way, if you thought a Democratic win would usher in like this new generation of leaders, Nancy Pelosi now says whatever happens November 3rd, she will also be asking her colleagues to name her House Speaker again in 2021. Trish Turner, we know you'll be there after Election Day, after January, so we can be sure of that at least. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, and you can bet on it.
Next up on Start Here, the nightmare in big cities this spring was running out of ICU beds. Well, in smaller cities this fall, it's happened. Back in a bit.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The way we work, the way we live, the way we play has all changed. And the harsh reality is that the sacrifice...
This is the sound of a health official in Chicago describing how frustrating it's become to watch COVID-19 cases rise.
Putting our people through this again, it's unfortunate. And I'm desperate to find the message that will work. I'm looking for someone to tell me what the message is so that we can do what it takes to turn this around.
In fact, at one point in this briefing, while she's just listing the number of cases, she breaks down in tears.
We are reporting 3,000 874 new cases for a total of 364,33 confirmed cases since the start of this pandemic. Excuse me, please.
That is the feeling of helplessness in a lot of health systems right now, from Chicago to El Paso, Texas, where officials are now beginning to send patients out on helicopters because they don't have the space to care for them there.
This week, 20 states and Puerto Rico setting new record highs for daily cases, 16 states hitting record hospitalizations.
Nationwide, we are now seeing more confirmed cases per day than at any other point of the pandemic. Let's check in with ABC's chief national correspondent, Matt Gutman. Because Matt, last time we spoke to you, you were in El Paso saying it's getting bad. And what? It sounds like it's getting even worse.
Well, we were seeing numbers, Brad, that were astronomical, you know, a 500% increase in the COVID daily cases, according to the city Department of Health. 500% in 2 weeks is enormous. And this has ramifications. That means more patients at the hospital, more people in the ICU, more people on ventilators, and more deaths.
It's not good. It's serious. And the people of El Paso need to understand that.
A dire situation in El Paso as hospitals are filled to the brink with COVID-19 patients.
You mentioned the helicopters, people being air-vacked out. There are now tents outside the University Medical Center, which is the biggest hospital there, where they are treating patients, both COVID patients and non.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott has requested the use of a William Beaumont Army Medical Center right behind me to help.
They are flying people out of their ICUs, which have been completely inundated with cases. They had four to a room at one point earlier last week, and it's going to get worse this week.
And so a curfew is imposed for all citizens between the hours of 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. under Section 3 of my order.
And again, this is a state that President Trump, during the debate, said has COVID, quote, totally under control. Right now, it is totally out of control there.
Well, and so from El Paso, Matt, you went up to Billings, Montana, And I guess it's striking to me the number of rural Western areas that are kind of getting their healthcare systems, their local hospitals overwhelmed all at once.
Yeah, the great common denominator between, you know, one of the southern cities in the country, El Paso, and one of the farthest north cities in the country, Billings, Montana, is a fierce independence streak, right? And the fact that there is very little mask compliance.
I don't love government overreaching and mandating things in general.
And that is why both of these places are getting hammered right now with astronomical increases in their COVID rates.
See if we can maybe move whoever you think is sickest, yeah, and sick on down. Okay.
Subsequently, their ICUs are not able to handle it. So it's not just in El Paso. In Billings, Montana, the biggest hospital there is the Billings Clinic Hospital.
Does it ever get chaotic?
I think we organize chaos.
It has an ICU capacity of 24 patients. When we were there, they had about 50 COVID patients who required ICU-type care.
We've held people in the operating room until we could get a room open for their care here. We're taking care of them on the cardiovascular unit.
There are literally COVID patients all over the hospital.
There are COVID patients all over the hospital, yes.
Our second morning there, the emergency department had 12 more patients than they had beds. They were stacked up in the hallway in the morning. And it's only getting worse. And it is, according to the medical staff, because people are not wearing masks. The people who work in the hospital, in the thick of the COVID wards, with COVID aspirated all over the place, they've been fine because they wear masks. Once you go out in the community, where people are still thronging at bars and restaurants, where I saw bartenders pouring drinks while not wearing masks, people in the kitchen not wearing masks when they cook food. It's like a completely different world. And then
it's like the two Americas we've been talking about, but two Americas just in that one city.
Exactly. And to the utter dismay of the frontline medical staff.
July, my sister contracted COVID working at a nursing home, and she was staying with my mom and stepdad, and she brought it to them not knowing she had it.
The manager of the ER in Billings, Montana, his name is Brad Von Bergen. His mother died of COVID this summer.
As a family, we decided to bring her home in.
Hey, Gary. Yeah. This is Imar.
We wanted to be close to her.
His stepfather was just released from the hospital after 3.5 months.
Was able to walk for the first time without somebody holding him up last week. And
just walked out on Friday. So this is hitting people really hard. And they say the answer is so simple, but people don't want to hear it. Just wear a mask.
They're hard to get used to, but man, you got to do it. You just got to wear your mask and you got to stay vigilant.
All right, Matt Gutman on the road from El Paso to Billings, Montana. Matt, thanks so much for checking in.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. I don't want to go unmentioned what we've been seeing in Colorado recently.
Raging infernos making parts of Colorado look like another planet.
There was just swirling sparks. Across the street was already on fire.
You got flame lengths jumping off the top of the ridges, you know, 300-400 feet.
One of these fires quickly became the worst in state history. Another that's happening at the same time ranks second all time and is literally named the East Troublesome Fire. It's already claimed multiple lives.
You plan for the worst? This is the worst of the worst of the worst.
After 2 weeks of burning, firefighters still weren't able to tame them. The East Troublesome Fire was actually closing in on the Stanley Hotel. You might know it as the Overlook Hotel in The Shining.
I can't imagine a better guest, especially in times like this, than to have 500 brave souls fighting these fights.
Guests were asked to evacuate, so what did the owner do? They told the firefighters, come spend the night here instead.
I hope they give us a good rating on TripAdvisor.
Well, then last night, those firefighters got a huge assist.
Whiteout conditions in Boulder County. They're telling people not to drive there. A lot of snow coming down right now.
And the steam coming off of there as the snow is putting out pockets of fire.
A gigantic snowstorm has swept through the state, dumping inches on one fire, then another. Temperatures plummeted towards zero. Incredibly, these fires are so hot that they're still burning. Fire departments are hoping for even more precipitation, but this is the single best development that region has gotten for 2 weeks. In the meantime, it was nice to see some good karma come to the Overlook Hotel for once. I actually called the owner of the Stanley last night just to check in. He says the building's okay, and because the roads haven't been plowed, these fire crews are still just holed up inside the hotel. Sound familiar? He says they've resorted to melting down candy for hot chocolate because, in his words, he'd be shocked how much hot chocolate 500 firefighters can eat. No word, by the way, on who's been residing in room 217. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.